welcome to No Filter Sports. It is September 25th. We were to record yesterday, so we apologize for that. We had a bit of a medical situation within the No Filter family here, so we have to do it today on Friday, but hopefully we get it out early enough and you can listen over the weekend.
By the way, Eli, I got something from listener Mike Howell, who tweeted yesterday, any of you three hosts can take a day off and the show goes on. Brandon takes off and the whole thing shuts down. He needs a raise. I'm for that.
Sorry about that.
I don't know about the raise. Unless you'd like to give up some of yours for Brandon, but that'd be fine. You could certainly do that. You're a magnanimous sort. I've got Larry Sorensen joining us a little bit later. Man, the former major league pitcher for 11 years at University of Michigan and all that, has been doing Wake Forest football games as a color analyst, and Wake Forest and Notre Dame, shortly after I talked to Larry on Wednesday, was postponed. He's going to tell us what's going on in terms of the COVID and Notre Dame and college football, and also talk about some interesting baseball developments, including Trevor Bauer talking about a four-day rotation, etc. We'll get into that. But first, what I want to start with, besides wrapping up the Tigers season in a moment, although it still has this weekend to finish, is the Lions. And I just find this to be another, as we had many times over the years, very dramatic, potentially, weekend. They're on the road. They're playing at Arizona. And the contrast between the Lions organization and its struggle to find its footing under a new coach contrasts greatly with that of Arizona, who, as you know, had a new coach last year in Cliff Kingsbury. Before I continue, any thoughts on that, gentlemen, before I tell you how stark the contrast is between these two organizations?
Yeah, okay. Here's my little, if Danny will pardon me for a moment.
Go ahead.
Here's my little capsule on this. As we know, the NFLs have lost their first two games. They have given up the most yards rushing in the NFL. Did you know that Arizona, 2-0 for the first time in the last 5 years, with Kyler Murray at quarterback, he is the first quarterback in NFL history to run for at least 150 yards, run, and three touchdowns in the season's first two games. New receiver DeAndre Hopkins out of Clemson, one of the great receivers in the NFL for a number of years now, is now with this ball club. He has 22 catches through the first two games. The rebuilt defense is giving up just 17.5 points per game for Arizona, second in the entire NFL. You know what happened to the NFLs at Green Bay last week. So I'm telling you, twice.
Do we really care what happened in Arizona? I mean, who cares?
Well, because they're playing the NFL. That's why.
Listen, there's a couple things. Number one, they have to play 60 minutes. It would really be nice to see if they play all four quarters. They've blown double-digit leads in both games. There is one light. I haven't heard anything otherwise, but I think Galladay is coming back, so that gives them a big-time receiver. And you know what? I do not believe, contrary to what everybody is saying right now, I don't think they'll get rid of Patricia. I don't think they will get rid of her. I don't think
that, her.
I mean, yeah, her. I love the name Patricia.
I love Patricia. Of course not.
You know, it's just one of those things. What I'm anxious to see is the new operator in charge, what she's going to do.
Sheila Ford Hamp,
right? What she just said this week was that she's reevaluating everything. She's taking notes and going to drop bodies for later. So I'm looking forward to what she's going to do. I believe he'll last the season, but I do not think he'll be back next year.
Let's say at this point, they're looking at potentially 0-4. Quite simply, they're going to probably lose at the Cardinals. They're 6-point underdogs. But here's the bigger picture to me. In 2018, two seasons ago, the Cardinals were 3-13.
Yeah.
They had a new coach in Steve Wilks. They had a rookie quarterback, Josh Rosen, all excited. They drafted him 10th. They realized after that season they were in error. They had made a mistake. They abandoned their convictions and moved on. They admitted their misjudgment. So what do? They hire the controversial Cliff Kingsbury, whose air raid offense at Texas Tech was being laughed at. It had never succeeded in the NFL. He was 35-40 in college after five seasons there. They draft Murray, 5'10", who wanted to play baseball, was a first-round baseball draft choice. And look what's happened. Now they're the talk of the league. They're going to blow past the Lions. They're going to blow past the Panthers without Christian McCaffrey. They're going to blow past the Jets, who are awful. They'll be 5-0. The Lions could be 0-4. So, yes, what you say, Sheila Hamp, is on the clock. And she has, you know, listen,
she's not on the clock, Eli. She's not going anywhere. And you know, she's not. And the Fords will never, ever sell this team as they should.
Well, let's not get into selling the team. Let's say that this is her first real, it's actually her second test, because she participated in the decision to keep Patricia and Quinn this year. So
Danny keeps saying to great mystification, as far as I'm concerned, that he's not going to get fired. Danny, I guess you missed the Fox pregame. I guess you missed the Fox pregame show on Sunday, where Terry Bradshaw sat in the studio and said to the nationwide cameras, I quote, "If you ask me, it's pretty simple. When a coach comes in, he makes a difference. Matt Patricia has not made a difference. And this quarterback, Matthew Stafford, is being wasted," end quote.
Well, that's Terry's opinion, and that's fine.
And with pure exception, you know, the only two coaches in a long time that have been successful, Wayne was a little bit successful, and so was Caldwell. I mean, and all of us were kind of confused when they got rid of Caldwell. But you know what? This woman is a dynamic woman. She has had an awful lot to do with the Henry Ford Museum. She restructured that entire place.
That's not funny, Bob. That's not funny.
So that qualifies her to run an NFL franchise.
Bob,
she had a lot to do with the Henry Ford Museum.
Let me tell you something, Bob. She's smarter than you are. Okay, yeah. She's much smarter.
More accomplished, magna cum laude, more than you. Okay, right. So let's not laugh at her.
Yeah, she was born with the name Ford, Eli.
Laugh at her as a human being?
You guys, we had one listener write and say, "You two are slappies for the FLs." Said slappies for the FLs.
I don't care. What the hell does that mean?
We don't defend
that.
The
means
Lions.
You defend the Fords. You defend that team every chance you
I
get.
Didn't say that bullshit.
Bob, you just got to edit that.
How do you manage to piss me off every show? All we're trying to say is this is a serious decision for Sheila Hamp, okay? And I agree with Denny. She seems to be a remarkable person.
Yes.
She's 68. She's quite accomplished. She has wanted to do this all her life. She is being tested right now. She's waited half a century for this. She sat at her father's side. She helped work with her mother. Now, has she made great decisions so far? Probably not, because she brought Patricia back. But I'm just saying, this is up to her to do the right thing. And if she does the right thing and gets a coach that works or doesn't, whatever, it's just, you just can't just, eviscerate people like that. You just can't do it.
Yeah, and you know,
I'm
the other thing.
Eviscerating the Ford family.
Hang on a minute.
Really? Oh, jeez.
Hang on a minute. Just one second. You know, she doesn't know she probably doesn't know, maybe she does might know what a 31 pick is or a 24 trap. She probably doesn't know that. But she certainly has the ability to judge talent with some of the things that she's done. Talk to Jeff Daniels. Jeff Daniels goes crazy about her when he talks about her.
That doesn't matter either, the fact
it doesn't. But you know what?
that doesn't matter either.
It shows that she knows what the hell she's doing.
You guys are saying a lot of funny stuff today.
Because
Jeff Daniels likes her. It shows that she knows what she's doing.
Bob, you don't understand. You know, read about it.
I guess
it. Find all the things that she's done. You know, out all the things.
Let's have preconceived notions about people, and let's bury them before they have a chance to show what they
but
can.
But I'm going
to
add one thing.
I said she's on the clock to make a decision, depending on what happens in the next few days.
Yeah, as far as I'm concerned, when and if they make a change, and they're going to make a change, I don't think there's any question, but when and if they make a change, let's go out and get a coach that's won someplace for a long time. Not somebody that just, you know, comes in and goes 3-13 again.
We talked about that last week. I mentioned all the assistant coaches, the coordinators.
Right. Yeah. I think Brandon is saying something here or trying
to. What's up, Brandon?
Well, Denny, you said change is probably inevitable. We'll get a new coach, but do you think we'll get a new GM?
Oh, I think the GM's got to go too. Absolutely. I said that last show. Absolutely. He's proven nothing.
If this plays out the way it looks, which is going to be another disastrous season, 64th in a row since they won a championship, the 57th or 8th for the Ford family not having won anything, then there's time to really make a series. They're not going to sell the team. We know that. But calling for it is silly. When you scream and yell, sell the team, what's that? That's just air. That's just going.
You're right. You're right. Because maybe with enough pressure, they will. But here's the thing neither of you guys has mentioned so far. May I see a show of hands from the peanut gallery in terms of confidence that Sheila Ford Hamp is going to make the right hiring decisions? And the bigger question than that, if she's smart, She gets the hell out of the way. They get a good GM if they don't want Bob Quinn. Let the football people make the decisions about a new GM and a coach. Sheila, stay out of it.
Well, you know what? And the Tigers have the same problem right now. They don't have enough baseball people where the positions that need to be the decision-making decisions, the evaluating the talent, they don't have enough people in there right now that used to play. That's a short side. Not only that, lastly, the thing about it is bringing in a new owner doesn't solve a problem. It's going to take time to solve the problems that the Lions have had for 64 years.
I go back to my original point. And that she is going to have to make a big decision at some time, and we will judge her according to what she does. I'm not going to condemn her before she puts it all on the line and decides what to do with this coach. We'll save that for when it becomes something that we can debate after she makes that decision or doesn't make that decision, which would also be something to debate. But anyway, we'll talk about, we got a lot to talk about. Got to get into the Tigers and Michael Fulmer. And I watched the broadcast.
Can we mention, please, what we had intended to lead with? And this goes back to Denny's hometown. We're talking about the death of the great Gale Sayers this week.
Well, yeah, in fact, we can do that right now if you want, because that to me was heartrending, and I'll tell you why. I was 15 years old when he became a rookie in 1965, and we had never seen anything like that. Right. Don't forget, it was black and white TV, and the only African-American running back that we'd really gotten to see was Jim Brown. It was a different type. He was shifty. He could move. He was more of a power fullback. Suddenly, and here in Detroit, what did you have? You had Nick Petrosanti. You had Nick Eddy. You had even Mel Farr by 67. Not a great runner. He was good, but not great. In New York, what did I see? Straight ahead white guys, Alex Webster, people like that. Yeah. Even Frank Gifford was a tailback, but nothing like the black players that would come along later. And don't forget, we didn't see Gale Sayers, the Kansas Comet. They were never on TV. We had no chance, any of us, to see him because Kansas.
Wait. If you grew up in Detroit, as I did, you saw him twice a year. You saw the Lions play the Bears twice a year.
Okay.
So I saw a ton of Gale Sayers as a kid growing up. But you're making a great point, Eli.
You didn't see great running backs. You saw Tom Nowatzki, our friend. Nick Petrosanti, our friend. Right. Altie Taylor was an African American back, but not particularly shifty. Suddenly this guy comes
up. Yeah, you know, you're making a great point. I never thought of this before. If you look, I mean, we had guys who were kind of a combination running backs and flankers back then, like Bobby Mitchell and the great Lenny Moore from the Baltimore Colts. But he might have been the first truly great African-American running back. He might have been, yeah.
Jim Brown.
I mentioned Jim Brown. Jim Brown was the first.
He's a fullback, really. Yeah.
Right, he's a fullback. But there was more, you know, the NFL was Billy Cannon and Alan Ameche and Sarris and Jim Taylor. Paul Hornung. Not really. If he didn't run behind that offensive line in Green Bay, he was not particularly shifty either. But here you got this guy coming along, and in 1965 as a rookie, he scores 6 touchdowns in a game. And afterwards, this is what happened after the season when they put together a highlight tape talking about this amazing player.
With that game just 2 minutes old and the field slick from rain, Gale Sayers sprints past the prospectors for an 80-yard screen pass touchdown run.
Once in a generation or a lifetime, the great runner arrives in pro football. He is one of the select few whose number is burned into the memory of every fan.
Gale Sayers, the superstar. He cuts, weaves, stops, and goes. He runs with power and precision. As the saying goes, you ain't seen nothing yet. Watch him now. Sayers, NFL Rookie of the Year. A one-man Gale, dashing 85 dazzling yards on the longest punt return of the season. Here he is, galloping Gale, carrying the mail. This is his 6th touchdown of the game.
Six touchdowns, by the way, and
I saw him play a lot more than you guys because being from Chicago, and we would Sharon and I would go back and forth once in a while to see a game in Chicago with their dad because their dad was involved with not only the Cubs but the Bears. And I got to tell you, the Kansas Comet was something. And here, two things. Number one, he didn't play long enough. 7 years, right. But he had a great career in those 7 years. And the other thing that I learned yesterday. Was that he had a severe case of dementia toward the end of his life.
So, 77.
Just a shame. Just a shame.
I've always said this, that to use old NFL terminology, Gale Sayers was the greatest halfback I ever saw. Jimmy Brown was the greatest fullback I ever saw. And the guy who combined those traits the best was the noted double murderer, O.J. Simpson. Now, you can talk all you want to about Emmett and Walter and Barry Sanders and everybody who's came since, but I'm not coming off my opinion about that. Now, mm-hmm. you can big argument. Who's the best ever?
Well, I think
about Sayers, and let me add one thing. One thing about Sayers, he could go over you, through you, or around you, and you'd never catch him if he got around you. He did all three of those things.
Nobody ever saw anybody cut, change directions, head up field, go backwards a few steps, cut back again.
Yeah. That's another good point. You're right. Yeah, you're right.
And something. He only had 65, 66, and 67 were injury free. He hurt himself near the end of 68 when Kermit Alexander was diving to hit somebody else, moved out of the way, and his helmet crashed into Sayers' knee. And Washington stayed on the field with him, wouldn't leave. He had such great respect for him until Sayers was taken off. And he came back in 69, had a decent year, but he was pretty much done. So he only had 5 years and was inducted into the Hall of Fame, the youngest ever at 34, because of those 5 seasons where we saw something we had never seen before. So,
and I think he's got the record for the most yards running back on a punt return. I think he's got
And who can ever forget the movie Brian Song, which made so many people, everybody in the world saw that. The Western
everybody
world
cried.
Saw that.
Everybody.
But Denny, as you know from being a Bears fan, the Chicago Bears, the year they drafted Gale, drafted another pretty good player too, didn't they? From downstate. His name, Butkus. Richard Butkus.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I want to get into the Tigers. We got Larry Sorensen coming on in about 15 minutes, but I want to tell you, you don't need your reading glasses to see somebody 6 feet away. You can't use them, but still you can't see your phone without your reading glasses. So that's why many people over 45 who have lost their close vision, beginning what I got, multifocal lens implants. They're amazing. You see the tiniest print and see perfectly at a distance. It's life-changing and lasts a lifetime. You can get that from Dr. Yaldo. If you're under 45, he's got the most precise custom LASIK in the world. Yes, once and for all, you throw out your annoying contacts and glasses for good, toss them in the garbage, and you'll see perfectly up close and at a distance. These surgeries are the safest with the fewest side effects in all of medicine. So get a free evaluation. Find out which procedure will change your life in ways you can only imagine. It costs nothing except maybe your glasses and your contacts. Call 1-800-398-EYES. That's 1-800-398-EYES. Go to YaldoEyeCenter.com. Tell them No Filter Sports sent you. You'll save $1,500 off the regular price. And if you're looking for a luxury car, you know where to go. I always tell you about Hoot McInerney's Star Lincoln, premier Lincoln dealership, an exemplary family business started by the legendary auto giant Hoot. He was a philanthropist, too, so involved in sports in Detroit. Star got over 100 five-star reviews in July alone. That's like one per car. And here's a few. One woman said, "My entire experience is more than wonderful." Experience it yourself. Go to Starlink and make an appointment at 248-354-4900 or buy effortlessly online at starlincoln.com. You're listening to the No Filter Sports Podcast. Well, the Tigers. Yeah, by the way,
if you want to start with baseball, can we start not with the Tigers, but with the biggest story of the entire week? And that was the big piece in the Detroit News on Wednesday with a blazing headline across the top of it. Former Tiger Denny McClain to sell baseball memorabilia. McClain will live stream his No Filter Sports podcast show with Eli Zarrett and Bob Page from his home throughout the sale. And autograph purchased items for just $25 a piece. Jeez, Jenny, giving you a chance to toot your own horn again about this. And by the way, they just auctioned off all of Vin Scully's memorabilia Wednesday. And they got more than $2 million for it. Is that what you're expecting?
Yeah, we were trying to have Vin Scully on yesterday, and now I know why he wasn't answering the phone. They had this auction going on all week, so he is excused. We hope to have him back on Monday. So nice man,
that'd be great,
very very nice man.
All right, what about the Tigers, Eli?
Well, the season's over. I mean, they're 22-33. They've lost 10 of 12, and the last three by a run. Curiously, Miguel Cabrera has suddenly all come of a alive. Sudden. He's had an entire season in the last two games. His last two games, he's 5-for-10, 3 homers. He's raised his OPS to a 756, which is now about average. He's been below average. So I don't know. Maybe he's going to get it together, and maybe his lower body problems are about to end, and he can have another couple of good seasons. I don't know about that.
We talked about this at the time Lynn Henning wrote it, and I said at the time that it was kind of silly. He said the best thing to do right now, this is a couple months ago, send Miggy home for the last 2 years of his contract, just pay him and just move on from it. Ridiculous. The younger players idolize this once great hitter, okay? And the Latino kids especially idolize him. And now, as you say, Eli, he's turning around, he got 10 home runs, he's raised. I mean, what are you going to do about Miggy? If what he's done this year, if you extrapolate this and apply it to next season, 162 games, hopefully, you're looking at a DH who hits 30 home runs, maybe hits 260 or 270. Mm-hmm. Why wouldn't you keep Miggy?
Sure you would.
First of all, it makes no difference if you have him on the team or not. You're not going to win. You are not going to win. The bottom line is pitching, pitching, and more pitching. They have to come up with some kind of a program that puts pitching number one on the ball club. Scoring a touchdown. They scored a touchdown last night. Still lost.
So
what do you do? You know, you have to go back to the beginning and start with the kids who, you know, first of all, Mize has got to be very strong. He hasn't pitched much this year. Send him to Puerto Rico. Send him to Guam. Send him to Keokuk, Iowa. He's got to pitch about every fifth day, and he's got to start working with the stuff he has. If he has the stuff they think he has, yeah. And I'm not sure anymore because there's two things. We were told what great control he had. This guy doesn't have any great control. The only great control he's got so far is that ball about Peter High right down the middle of the plate. And I'm telling you, they're hitting rockets. They're not hitting the ball softly either. They're hitting rockets.
He's
got a lot of work to do. They need to find an instructor to work with him only. One guy, let him live with him. Let him walk through the techniques of pitching. Let him go through the philosophy of pitching and learn how to pitch. Because, like I said a couple of times before, in college you can throw little curveballs and little sliders and win lots of games because those guys are playing in the Z League. Minor league baseball, major league baseball is a whole different world.
Yeah, and Casey Mize's struggles, and of course Matt Boyd's continuing struggles. He was bombed the other night. That's one subject. But now, if you look at the rest of the ball club, here's what mystifies me. Nico Goodrum has now struck out 65 times in 143 at-bats through 39 Jeez. Games. His strikeout rate is 40%. That's the third worst among players this year. Nico Goodrum is now hitting 176 with 5 homers and 19 RBIs.
My God, you know Ray Oyler hit higher than that?
No, yeah, he had 135. Right. He had 135.
Yeah, I'm only talking for about a week.
I know.
Yeah, and we're talking about the Mendoza line coming up here pretty soon. Now, consider this also, boys. We thought he looked pretty good, he's a kid. He may turn out to be great, but Isaac Paredes looks awful. And even Jose Reyes has taken a nosedive. This guy was hitting up in the 330s. He's down to 285. And it's concerning about that, because I see every game, he's proven to me that while I think he can be a good outfielder in the big leagues defensively, I don't think he's a good center fielder. So we'll see what happens with that, man. I mean, this is a lot of stuff.
You're looking at guys like Reyes, who was in the minors for many, many years. He did have a little brief, resurgence or first surge, you could say, because that's not a resurgence in the last year. Goodrum is another guy that's been around a little bit. Willie Castro around a little bit. So we don't know what they real. But here's the sad thing. Michael Fulmer is 27. You know how well he started, what a great find he was. He had his ulnar nerve in his elbow repositioned in 2017. He had a torn meniscus. He had a rehab in 2018. In 2019, he's out after Tommy John surgery. So he's coming back now. He's struggling. His ERA is about 8.8. But listen to this. Last night, he was just rocked in the first inning. I watched the first inning.
Give up a three-run homer. It's like you don't even give your chance the team to win.
So I'm listening to Rex Hudler. I don't know who the play-by-play guy is. And listen to what they said about Fulmer as he's struggling to return from injuries.
Michael Fulmer. Doesn't it seem like just yesterday he was one of the hot up-and-coming starters in our division?
Without a doubt. As tough as this business is, man, you can be hot for a year or so, and then you're cold for the next two or three, and then you're out of the game. We're not hoping that for Fulmer, but...
I mean, he was tough against the Royals in his first 5 starts. And now Ryan O'Hearn, and Ryan hits it hard to left field. Dixon is there. So Fulmer is fooling nobody. And he's lucky he has two outs.
That was the first inning where the first five guys got on. And then,
hey, Eli, I have a pithy response to this, a very pithy response. The new Joel Zamaya.
What?
What?
Who?
Fulmer. No. The new Joel Zamaya. Oh, he's a guy with a tremendous arm. He was a terrific pitcher, and he got hurt. Zamaya washed out pretty quickly, and Fulmer's going to do the same thing, unfortunately.
Different type of pitcher. Zamaya was 100 mile an hour, just, you know, one
inning. Fulmer was throwing in the high 90s when he was healthy.
And I also think Joe wasn't really serious about the game. He was serious about other things off the field and had a good time. Where Fulmer, it looks like he's serious about what he's trying to do. He's trying to be a major league pitcher. But you know what? He's got the same disease right now as Mr. Mize does. Everything that he throws is damn near down the middle of the plate.
But he's only 27, Denny. Don't we have to give him – I mean, he's come off three seasons of being injury-plagued. I mean, he's starting all over again almost. What do you do? I mean, you can't give up on him because he showed the potential. People have come back from Tommy John surgery.
Yep. Well, only, you know, here's the critical remark about that. Only 60% of the people who have Tommy John surgery, it's successful for their career. Only 60%. So he may fall into the 40% window, and it's time to listen. I would have got rid of him before he came off the disabled list if somebody would have taken him. There's a couple of guys on the club I'd get rid of right now. Mm. Maybe even Mize.
Yeah, I'll tell you this. On the Mets game here in New York the other night, Ron Darling had this to say about a guy who's undergoing Tommy John surgery, Justin Verlander. He said, "I know this guy. He's such a tough competitor. He will come back from Tommy John, even if he doesn't pitch at all next year, even if he's pitching at age 40, and JV is going to be JV. I don't know.
Next year, it's a year recovery before
That's as blindly positive as Hudler's thing was blindly.
But JV is a special, special pitcher person. And you know that.
At 40, of course. At 40 years, just like Sheila Hamp, he's a very special person. At 40 years old.
You said that.
I just said that. Yes.
I didn't say that. You said that. I said JV's a special person.
Right. Well, I said, right. Okay.
Well, and he's proven it.
My point was, just because you're a special person doesn't mean you can come back from an injury. That 60% of the people come back because he's a special person. He'll do what 50% of the people can't do. He may come back. I'm just saying that Ron Darling is being overly positive to say something nice about a great pitcher. We don't know whether he's going to be able to come back or not.
Yeah. And maybe you're right about that. Sure.
One other item in baseball, Dombrowski, who has been heading up this great big movement down in Nashville, trying to put a major league team there. I don't think he's going to have time because I think the Angels are going to offer him the job of president and general manager of the Angels. And you know what? I was thinking about it the other day before I read this story. Who would I pick to be our general manager, president?
Dombrowski.
Dombrowski. I mean, I can't imagine a guy more talented. And the guy, because he takes the mandate from the owner, in other words, I want to win this year. And he goes out and fills every hole that needs to be filled. Money's not the consideration. He just wants to prove what he's done in the past. I think it wouldn't be bad to bring him back, but there's no chance.
Yeah, since the Tigers are playing Kansas City this weekend, we would be remiss if we didn't mention that Alex Gordon is going to be retiring at season's end. 14 years with the Royals. What a great defensive left fielder. By all accounts, a really good guy. So we wish him well.
Not a fabulous hitter, but a nice career.
Yeah, he's up and down. Danny, I've got another big story in baseball that's going to be playing out over the next few years. It looks like this guy, and I guess he's been in some trouble with the law, Steve Cohen in New York, is going to be allowed to buy the Mets. Now, did you know that Steve Cohen, at $16 billion of net worth, is by far, according to reports I've read, the richest owner in baseball? He's bringing Sandy Alderson back in to run the Mets. And this doesn't pretend well for anybody. Of course, they're going to have Noah Syndergaard back from injury next year. And I want to tell you what I saw Monday night from the amazing Jacob DeGrom. He pitched a typical DeGrom game, seven innings. He struck out 14. But the Mets didn't score any runs for him, and he loses 2-1. Now, here's an interesting thing about this. If you can look at the greatest starting pitchers, and we're sitting with one of them right now, Denny McClain, greatest starting pitchers who ever lived, you can't pick one guy and say, well, he was the best. But I'm going to tell you this. Nobody I've ever seen is better than DeGrom, and he is now well on track to win his third straight Cy Young.
Well, give him 5 years. Let him pitch for 5 years and then find out. Because I just thought it was wrong that he could win a Cy Young Award by only winning 10 or 11 games in a year. There were other people that won a lot more games and had effective years, hey, too.
Bad Trevor, ball club. No support.
Well I personally think Trevor Bauer with his four wins is going to win the NL.
He's 5-4. Hey,
Brandon, since you're so into this, you look at the fact that they traded the one kid away to San Diego. Clevenger is now hurt. I know, Eli, you got to take a break. I just want to say this one thing about that. How do the Indians keep replacing these starting pitchers? How do they keep doing this?
Because they signed them. Because they look hard. They put the pressure on their scouts. That's why. I mean, we don't have that kind of application in this organization. We're more interested in all of these new computer programs and applications than we are going out to see people pitch. They've cut back on all expenses at the Tigers. Nobody's traveling the way they used to travel. Of course, we have a pandemic's going on. That's got to be one of the reasons. But even last year, the year before, and I can go back all the way to freehand and tell you the things that the organization has done. And it's not in the best interest of a ball club when you don't let the scouts go look.
Hey, I want to point out before we take a break here and welcome in Larry Sorensen shortly that I think we should give a little kudos to Derek Jeter, who was going to be run out of town in Miami. Another guy, Bob, you're going to run him out of town too, doing an awful, terrible job and being ridiculous and unqualified.
He did do a terrible job. He wasn't unqualified.
He got rid of Stanton, Yelich, Marcelo Zuna, and guess what? The Marlins are over 500.
Yeah.
And they're in the playoffs. Hey, since 2017, the Hope Not Handcuffs program has helped 4,600 people get the help and resources they may not have gotten otherwise. And anybody struggling with a substance abuse disorder or an addiction, whether it be heroin, painkillers, cocaine, even alcohol, can go into one of 100 participating police locations and ask for help with no fear of being arrested. The police officer will treat you with compassion, call a volunteer angel that'll come to the police department and assist with paperwork, making phone calls, and get that person, if it's you or a loved one, placed in the treatment that day. The first step doesn't need to be the hardest. There is hope. Go to hopenothandcuffs.com. That's hopenothandcuffs.com. Learn more and make the step towards recovery. You're listening to the No Filter Sports Podcast.
I got one thing to say about the guy who's buying the Mets. He paid a billion and a half dollar fine for insider trading. He never spent a day in jail. $1.5 billion. We're not talking chump change here. I mean, when you compare him to Martha Stewart, her money was chump change, but it was still the same crime. She went to jail. This guy beat it because he had so much money. And hiring Alderson, I'll guarantee you one thing. The reason why Alderson's being hired as the president of the ball club is because Major League Baseball said that's the way it's going to be if you want to buy this club. I still can't believe they approved him.
Yeah, $1.8 billion, I think it was. It's an amazing amount of money. Anyway, you know.
That's a lot of money.
There's going to be. You know, Denny, in 1968, two teams made the postseason. That year was the Tigers and the Cardinals. In 69, four teams made the postseason. They expanded to divisional
now,
play.
How many?
And then there was 10, which was a pretty nice number, five in a league. And now this year, first time, and maybe the last time, hopefully, 16 teams, which is more than half of the teams in the league, and the Major League Baseball wants to make it permanent at 14 teams starting next year. That's nearly half the league going into the playoffs, and it's just too many.
Well, that kind of mimics hockey, doesn't it? Almost everybody gets in the playoffs in hockey.
Well, it used to be that way, Denny. When the NHL for a while had 16 of 21 teams years ago qualifying for the playoffs, and I interviewed John Ziegler.
Yes, you said all of them.
Red Wings
told that story. Yeah. He told us. Okay, go ahead.
If I told that story, Eli, it might have been almost 2 years ago now. And all I was going to say about this, for the people who haven't heard it, Eli, is that I yelled at Ziegler. I didn't yell at him, but I said, John, why don't you put everybody in? He says, yeah, we're thinking about that. And it is ridiculous.
It's going to happen in NCAA basketball this year. They're going to put every team in the tournament. 200. Yeah.
But it's also always happened in Michigan high school basketball and in other states' high school basketball. And who doesn't love March Madness? I don't think it's fair, but they've always done that there.
When you put 14 teams into the baseball playoffs, think about this. Why would an owner spend an extra $20, $30 million to get a key player when now you get him with 85 wins instead of needing 96? Why do we really need to spend that much more money? We can win 85 and all it means is a best of three series on the road. Big deal. So it de-incentivizes the regular season, which is what basketball and hockey did, and it's one of the reasons the downfall of both those sports for a long time. Too many damn teams in the playoffs.
I'm not sure about that.
No, I'm not either. I'm not either. I don't think it's a bad thing to have a lot of teams in the playoffs, but I think the first round must be either one game or three games, and that's enough.
Three games.
But three games would probably be the right number. But I just think it's better for the game. I think there's more interest. It's like the NBA. It's even the NBA playoffs. I mean, I watch some of the NBA playoffs, especially right now, and the Lakers are unbelievable. And bottom line, though, boy, I think it's good for the game. I think it's just a wonderful thing that we got 16 cities that are looking at Major League Baseball at that point in time. Not a bad idea.
Well, the NBA used to shout at it.
Yeah. Yeah, the NBA used to, of course, have its opening round series, the best two out of three. And if you look at, well, let's look at Detroit, okay, right now. I think there'd be a lot of people talking about the NBA a lot more if the Pistons were put in the playoffs, too, instead of narrowly having missed the playoffs. So I don't think it's that bad a thing. And with salaries continuing to spiral out of control, they have to have new revenue sources. What better way to do that? More playoff games, more teams involved, and bigger TV and radio broadcast rights.
And fewer people watching in the regular season because it doesn't mean as much, but that's the way it goes. It's funny, watching the NBA, it almost looks like a video game the way they got it there with all the it's actually video in the background of fans jumping up and down and doing things. It looks really, really phony, but that doesn't obscure how great the games are and the talent level of these players. They rather just made it look like a pickup game. I think that will be fascinating because there's nobody in the gym anyway to watch LeBron and Jamal Murray and these guys play. I don't know, play shirts and skins, whatever. But the talent level, and this is Jamal Murray. He's made some shots in the series that are just remarkable. But the Lakers are up 3-1 when they put LeBron on Jamal Murray late in the game, and he kind of held him. He had 28 points. He held him to 4 free throws, and now the Lakers lead 3-1. And how about Tyler Herro, the 6'6" rookie of the Heat? Man, he's only 20 years old, 37 points in 36 minutes. I don't think anybody saw this kid coming out of college think that.
Well, I don't know about that, Eli. If you watched him in college, you can see he wasn't getting the ball enough. He wasn't getting enough shots.
Yeah. He's the second highest scorer under age 21 in an NBA playoff game. The other would be?
Under age 21, Irvin?
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Very good. Irvin. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I would think so, because what he did. So if you guys have said what you want to say about that, my job has been to watch the NHL Stanley Cup Finals. It's kind of weird in a sense, because you got Doc Emmerich, who's always been kind of a germaphobe, sitting in Marysville, Michigan, his home, broadcasting the games off the TV picture. So his call isn't quite synced sometimes. It's just a little weird. The fake crowd noise. I mean, look, we're seeing this everywhere right now. But game four is, or was, depending upon when you're hearing this, Friday night. On a recent show, I talked about one-time Red Wing Ricky Bonus, now the interim head coach at Dallas. Good guy, great hockey man. He's been a head coach for 6 different NHL teams, never won a cup. And what a story it would be if at age 65, he could win one with Dallas, though they trail, as we record this, 2-1. Yeah. Now, you guys know this story about Tampa head coach John Cooper. At least I think a lot of you do. This guy's from BC, played only high school hockey in Saskatchewan. I don't know why, Eli, but he went to Hofstra on Long Island for some reason. He gets a business degree, and then he decides, and he only played 1 year of club hockey there, he wants to be a lawyer. But the only law school John Cooper can get into is the bottom-feeding Cooley Law School in Lansing. He gets his law degree. He serves as a public defender for 11 years in mid-Michigan, and he only started playing hockey again while in law school. Ultimately, he got a job as head coach at Lansing Catholic Central, and then eventually went from there to the St. Louis Bandits, whatever that is, and now John Cooper is just a couple games from sitting on top of the hockey world. Wow.
Yeah. Well, he seemed to have lost connection with Denny. He's going to try and come back. That hasn't happened before with him.
That's not true, and you know it's not true. We just made a trade. That's all. And we got cash considerations and a future round draft choice, too. Go ahead. Tell him what the trade is.
Well, we're going to get Larry Sorensen here in a minute. But first, I want to tell you that Feldman Automotive, Michigan's number one Chevy dealer, five locations, Novi, New Hudson, Lansing, Livonia, Highland. Feldman has nine locations in all, including Feldman Hyundai of New Hudson, Feldman Key of Novi, Dodge, Jeep, and Ram of Woodhaven, and Michigan's number one pre-owned supercenter in Waterford, known simply as 1-800-PRE-OWNED. You buy a fully inspected and guaranteed pre-owned auto from Feldman, relax with their exclusive, drive it for 3 days, love it, or bring it back guarantee, and you'll get their exclusive guaranteed credit approval. You can also buy online at FeldmanAuto.com with an effortless, hassle-free experience. You'll find what you need guaranteed at one of Feldman's nine locations. Let them earn your business and at the same time support No Filter Sports. Power Home Solar, America's fastest-growing solar energy company, right here in Metro Detroit, is where it's based. State-of-the-art panels, all made in America. And with solar energy from Power Home, you know what you save? Money. The environment, and also those costly and incredibly infuriating power outages. They've partnered with Generac, which is the nation's largest provider of in-home backup battery and generator systems. So from now on, you go with Power Solar and Generac, you will never have a power outage ever. Power Home has financing starting at $99 a month. Call them at 1-800-POWER-90 and save an additional $1,800. Join the movement to solar and let the sun shine in. And speaking of the sun shining in, terrible segue, but Larry Sorensen is with us, and from sunny, is it Asheville, North Carolina? Is that where you're at?
Outside the Asheville area, but it is raining today. It's been raining for about 2 days.
And normally, you would have been in your final preparations for Notre Dame Wake Forest. You do the Wake Forest color commentary on football. What is going on? Well, after we talked Wednesday, they postponed the game. What's the feeling? What are the reasons, and what's the prognosis down there?
Well, you can't believe what happened on Wednesday. It got to be really a circus. Notre Dame evidently had seven players that tested positive out of 94 tests for the COVID virus on Monday after their game over the weekend. So they called off practice on Wednesday initially. Then they decided to postpone the game. In the meantime, on Wednesday, John Curry, who is the Wake Forest athletic director, was able to – Wake Forest had a game on the 9th scheduled with Campbell, and they had next week off. They were able to switch that game from the 9th to the 2nd and then have the following week off, have the 9th off. And it's just become – it's become a whole situation. So they're not playing this weekend. We'll play Campbell on the 9th and have the following weekend off before playing Virginia on the 16th. And all that happened in the matter of about 4 hours.
It's amazing. So here's the question for you, Larry. I want your personal opinion about this. Do you think, with respect to young college athletes in the prime of their lives, this is overblown? Or, on the other hand, do you think they should have tried to play college ball to begin with this year because of these COVID issues?
I do not think it's overblown. And let me preface that by saying my wife is the director of quality and regulatory services at a hospital up here in Rutherfordton, North Carolina. And the last thing that she does before she goes to bed every day is calculate the amount of patients in the hospital, whether or not there have been any deaths. And she sends that in to the county government, who then forwards it on to the federal government. So she sees the numbers every day from the 150-bed hospital that she works at. And she deals with the doctors and everybody else every single day. And so I don't think it's overblown. I think that everybody is trying to make the best of a horrible situation, and they've approached it different ways. It turns out that waiting and now looking back at the information might turn out to be beneficial to the Pac-12 and to the Big Ten. The ACC decided to go ahead and do it, but what the ACC did was they allowed themselves 2 days to play with. Ordinarily, you don't have two bye weeks during the course of your season. So they filtered in some extra time specifically for these kinds of instances. And we've seen about six games canceled so far within the ACC. Some of them are going to be made up on the 12th of December, such as Notre Dame and Wake Forest. And I think Virginia Tech, or there's another game that's going to be already made up on the 12th. But the ACC had the foresight to schedule in some days off to do some maneuvering. I think it's a very, very serious virus. I think it's tragic what's happening.
Well, it's obviously a serious virus, but to young guys in the prime of their lives?
In the prime of their lives, who still are getting it, still are being affected. And I think, Bob, what I'm most worried about and she's concerned about is what kind of effects are we going to see down the road? What kind of effects are we going to see on these athletes that because they do have it, are going to go through lung scarring or other things that may happen to their body and their tissue later on in life? And we don't know that, and we won't know that for a long time. And so to just ignore it as saying these are young guys who are invulnerable. They're supermen. They're young athletes. I don't think that's the right approach either.
Yeah.
Okay, let me ask you this then. The Pac-12, we haven't mentioned this on the show yet. Pac-12 just announced this week, okay, well, I guess we're going to play two now. They're not going to start till November, and they got a seven-game schedule. Is that the right thing to do?
Well, I guess that's the Big Ten approach as well. And I think that the Big Ten is going to have some big troubles because they've got eight games scheduled in 8 weeks. And so if they do lose some games, and you know that there are going to be games lost, doing the proper tracing. It's the contact tracing that is the biggest problem of all of this. Wake Forest has a player that did not practice for 49 days, even though he was asymptomatic, but he was a multi-position player that kept running into guys, and he never tested positive, but he was asymptomatic. So he had that, and he ran into these players all the time, and they had to keep him off the practice field. I think the Big Ten is going to get in trouble because they have no way to make up any games, and you're going to find teams that don't play as many games that are going to qualify for championship playoffs.
The thing that I hope for here, and I think everybody has to hope for, is the thing that, well, obviously, to go back a second, the Pac-12 had no choice. When the four of the five Power Five conferences go back, decide to play, they can't be the only one. They do, however, have this daily testing from a company called the Quidel Corporation that's coming soon. And even in the Big Ten, forget the woman's name, but she's in charge of infectious diseases and represents Michigan State, said right now, the reason why are we doing it on October 24th? Because right now we're not ready. And they're not ready in the Pac-10 either to test every day and do this. But, you know, the other thing, and maybe, Larry, you can weigh in on this. Christine Brennan wrote an interesting article in USA Today. I don't know if everybody saw it or not. When the Big Ten acquiesced a few weeks ago, a week ago Wednesday, she was furious. She goes to Northwestern. She said, we always were more high-minded. The Big Ten concerned with science and medicine and treating football no differently than the student body at large. Then she says, rapid tests for players. And by the way, the students at Michigan State and Michigan and Wayne State are not going to class at all. She says rapid tests for players, but not the elderly, children, teachers, or students paying for their education amid these outbreaks. And so what are your thoughts on the fact that now we've said, okay, we're not going to really call them student athletes. Let's stop pretending they're young pros that play for us. They're willing to risk their health for this. I guess, you know, the cat's out of the bag. It's a whole different world, college sports. I don't know what it's like when you play because you were only a baseball player, which is a secondary sport in Michigan. But that's to me the hypocrisy that football players really are different. Let's not pretend they're just student athletes anymore.
Well, I think it's been for a long time that the players are more than just student athletes. There's a lot more to it. And my first thought on that is it doesn't matter what topic you raise. You are not going to find 100% consensus. There are always going to be dissenting opinions coming up, whether it's two people or whether it's 200,000 people or whether it's 2 million people in a land of 330 million. There are always going to be other voices to be raised. And that's part of the beauty of living in the United States of America, is that you can raise that voice when you have a dissenting opinion. As far as what they're doing to give student athletes an advantage, and I'm really surprised that schools that do not have students on campus are continuing with the games. That was one of the things I said from the start, was I didn't understand how you could not have organized classes on campus but still have your football teams playing on the weekends. And the way they got around that was they said, we're not going to have fans. Well, now the governor of North Carolina has put in an amendment so that 7% of your stadium's population can attend the games. Because why? Because the parents were so upset that they couldn't attend the games to see their sons play. So they had that dissenting voice, and the governor said, okay, now we'll let 7% of the people in to watch the game.
Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, our organization has to announce right now that we have made another trade. We have decided to retain the rights to Larry Sorensen, but we have shipped a number two draft choice from the year 2021 to Minnesota to reacquire Dennis Dale McLean.
Oh, I thought
Denny, welcome back. What happened to you, buddy?
I thought he was a player to be named in a previous trade.
A player to be named.
We've got.
Oh,
There he goes again.
He just froze again.
They were starting to set up the house, and they disconnected the internet in one of the rooms, the big box. So we're back.
Hey, Denny, I know we've had Larry on the show before.
I thought it was Mr. Kraft found out I was talking about him, and he disconnected it.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, you crapped out. And Dan Wallach, former guest on the show, who's a disciple of an attorney here in New York named Judd Burstein, quoted Burstein, and it's one of the great lines you ever heard. How much justice can you afford?
That's right.
In Mr. Kraft's case, with that respect to that massage parlor, a lot of justice he can afford.
You know, before we move on, I want to talk a little baseball with Larry. Now, I just want to just give people a little bit of background here. You got to understand this. And Denny, I don't know you know this, but Larry
Brandon
and I
is
go
waving
back.
Again. Brandon is
oh,
waving.
Well, that's right. 50, we have to say goodbye to our radio audience. And to, you know, pardon me, Brandon. I had that in my head, but I got caught up in nostalgia for a second. Thank you for listening to WA. Thanks for listening to the No Filter Sports podcast. Larry and I go back to my roots at cable TV in Ann Arbor in the early 70s, before there really was cable TV that you could get at home. It was called cable access. It was strictly local. And we did the Michigan baseball games. And I look back and, man, I had no boss, no direction, no pregame show, no interview, no nothing. And Larry was part of the team. My brother-in-law was a backup catcher. And so it's a long relationship that goes way, way back. And it's great. I never would have guessed 45 years ago that we'd be doing a show together someday down the road.
But anyway, you know what happened to me?
Sabotage your broadcast because I wanted that job. So I was trying to get guys to screw your knobs up all the time.
But what happened to me is when I worked at WJR in the mid-70s, we had this amazingly gorgeous intern from the University of Michigan. She says, you know, my boyfriend is a baseball player. I said, yeah, who's your boyfriend? She says, Larry Sorensen. I said, I don't know who that is. She said, well, you have to meet Larry. So I did. This guy had such personality. He was so funny. I said, I'm taking you to the weekly meeting of the Detroit sports broadcasters to be interviewed and speak. I started your broadcast career,
oh,
pal.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, jeez. Okay. So you started George Blaha, Larry Sorensen,
Willie Mays.
Willie Mays. Mickey Mantle. Hey, let's talk a little baseball. So, you know,
Larry, I wanted to interrupt you there too, damn it.
Not funny anymore.
Since Larry's the guest, why don't we let him finish? Every time he goes to talk, why don't we stop? Go ahead, Larry. Yes. What'd you just say?
I said, now I'm just a get off my lawn guy and I'm not funny anymore.
Eli, can I please ask him this? Because Wake Forest did play one game against Clemson. Gulp. So before we leave college football for baseball, tell us what you thought watching Clemson play.
Clemson can do a lot of things at will. And Wake Forest, I think, will be about a 500 type team this year, but has been very competitive, four bowls in a row in the last 4 years. And it's a pretty darn good team. And Wake Forest and Clemson had their way with us. Trevor Lawrence is a spectacular player. ETN is, to me, the best running back I've seen in 3 or 4 years, and said that as a freshman when he came in 4 years ago. So they've got great skill position players, very aggressive on defense. I think that they'll be in the bowl championship this year.
I would like to hear Denny and Larry talk a little pitching. And I got two topics. Here's the first one. Trevor Bauer wants to go back because he's the Bryson DeChambeau of baseball. In other words, the scientific mind. He measures 50 metrics on himself every day. He's largely disliked like Bryson because he's very scientific and he's kind of a goofball. But what do you guys think? Larry, we were talking the other day. By your recollection, when did baseball go from the four-man to the five-man rotation?
Well, obviously, Denny, during his era, was doing it all the time. And I told you that I remember George Bamberger came over to be our manager. And he had those four 20-game winners in Baltimore.
Right.
Palmer, Cuellar, McNally, and Dobson. And so they were doing it back then. The difference, and Denny, you're a guy with 300 innings many, many times in his career. And you know the toll that takes because your past is well chronicled with the shots that you took just to go out and perform. But the difference is in this day and age that they won't let guys go more than 80 pitches every 4 days or four innings or three innings, whatever they take. And the pitch average pitches per inning has gone up significantly from when we used to think a 12-pitch inning was pretty much the norm.
You know, as far as the pitching goes, there's more. I keep telling everybody, just watch the number of times that a guy pitches, well, the four, five, six innings, whatever he pitches, and then see how many times he comes close to the glove. Find out, you know, and the percentage is so low, it's incredible. But yet they can find the middle of the plate relatively easy. I mean, you can just watch what happened last night. But here's the problem with pitching every fourth day. First of all, you can go from pitching every fourth day to the fifth day, but you can't go from the fifth day to the fourth day. That will absolutely destroy a career. You're all of a sudden, and you know what? If he's the ace of the staff, he's going to want to stay out there longer than six or seven innings. He's going to be the guy. And obviously right now he is the guy. But the bottom line is you can't back it up anymore. You can go from four to five, and because now every once in a while they get an extra day's rest when they've got a day off. So now they're pitching a sixth day, you know. But we even pitched, depending upon where we were competitively during the season, we would pitch every 2 days, three or four or five times a year, just to stay competitive with the races. So, and you know what? You just don't know the damage you're doing until the first time they tell you, listen, why don't you go to Ford Hospital tomorrow, see Dr. Livingood, and he's going to give you a cortisone shot. And you say, what the hell is a cortisone shot? Oh, you'll find out. It'll fix everything that hurts. And that's not true.
I would have said Dr. Livingood is a dermatologist, which is what he was. Why is he giving me a cortisone shot?
Bob, thank you very much for interrupting me. Dr. Livingood was the overseer for all medical applications with the Detroit.
We know that.
So you need to do, historically, you need to do a little research.
Well, we'll transfer that over at Michigan. We took butazolidine, which is what they give to horses.
Oh, yeah. God, Butte. Oh, my goodness. Yeah.
Horses, which is it even more. But, you know, Denny, the attitude has changed, though. You know, guys do not, even the aces don't think about going nine innings or even seven innings anymore. It's about pitches, and they talk about stressful pitches, stressful innings, and they monitor that. So it's just it's a different game. You know, we know a lot more than we did back in the day when I pitched and when you pitched. And, you know, with the project that I'm working on now, we see all these different tests. The one thing I really agree with you on is the control factor. And I heard Casey Mize doing an interview the other day. This morning I was listening to it. And he was talking about, I used to think down was down. He said, my down is not major league down.
No.
He said, every mistake I make is hit. He said, and I got away with it when I was facing lesser hitters. I can't get away with it now. And I think what we've done with all the analytics, and I'm a proponent of it, and Denny, you and I will argue this till the cows come home, I'm sure. But what we've done is we've trained guys to think that just their natural ability is going to allow them to compete. And I've heard players say, when I ask them the next day, what happened yesterday, they said, I'm usually 94 and I was only 92. Well, and I said, my goodness, if you can't compete,
because
you think you're 2 miles per hour less, it's going to be a long summer.
And that's what I keep preaching. It hasn't got anything to do with 92 or 94 or 95. It's got to do with the ability to throw good strikes. That's really what it's all about. And Mize, listen, now I know why, after watching him pitch a number of times now. Now I know why he won so many games in college. Those kids are playing at a Z-ball level, Z or Y level. And if you can throw a little curveball or a little slider to these guys, you'll get everybody out in college for the most part, except maybe an exceptional hitter, one or two guys on every team. That's like we were in high school. There were two players on every team, sometimes three, that could really play the game. But the college kids, yes, they compete. They have a great time. They play good baseball from time to time, but they aren't anywhere near a professional.
No question about that. The difference, I think, with Mize is the thing that I think is still the separator, and the thing that elevates professional players is the ability to adjust.
Yes.
And I think that he's got the mental capabilities to learn what he's doing wrong, to make the differences, instead of just saying 34 times a year, 32 times a year, I can just throw my stuff out there and compete. He's a guy that will make the changes and make the adjustments. He's a smart kid with multiple pitches that he can be successful with.
Well, one thing about it, Larry, he's well rested, so they can send him to winter ball this year and let him go do his thing. And what I have proposed is they go out and hire a real pitching coach, a real one that can live with him for a while, and start to teach him the theory of pitching, the applications of certain pitches, how the ball is supposed to spin compared to what he's been doing. And I'll tell you, make a world of difference if they put a guy in his pocket and just let him go and play winter ball and do his thing every fifth day.
Well, I think he's got the capabilities to make the changes. And as you well know, it's a game of adjustments. You know, it's funny because it's a game of routine and you want to be into the same routine all the time.
Yep.
Except that once the game starts, it's a game of nonstop adjustments. which is really kind of an interesting dichotomy.
Every pitch. And, you know, the other thing, too, is these kids, they don't understand adjusting to the way an umpire is starting to call a game either. And that's a big part of pitching. I mean, if you got an umpire likes to call the ball inside, you want to stay there. If you outside, you want to stay there. But I don't see the kids making the adjustments at all.
You call the pitch where it crosses the plate, Denny. It's not true anymore.
Bob, it's got nothing to do with what you're saying. Bob, you've never pitched an inning in your life.
And you've never umpired a game of Little League baseball, buddy. And you pitched 50 years ago. I'm going to tell you what's going on with this, Denny, but you won't listen because you once pitched in the big leagues 50 years ago. They have a computerized strike zone, Denny, and they are. And every game they go over this, that you missed 16 pitches last night. They don't have their own strike zones when anymore, though they did when you pitched and maybe when Larry pitched. It's all about the computer zone, and the guys who call more balls or strikes that aren't, they're fired, Denny, at the end of the year.
Not Angel Hernandez.
Angel Hernandez is a different matter. He's suing baseball.
Bob, let me tell you what you just admitted. Because you don't watch many baseball games, and you don't, because if you watch every Tigers game.
How about you, Danny?
How about you, Danny? What's that?
Watching baseball games. That was a cheap shot, Danny, but that's okay. I'm going to defend Bob for the first time. That was a cheap shot that you don't watch many baseball games. But can I interrupt this by saying, stop, you're both right. It's the old double mint, Dad. Before we go on to the next baseball topic, by the way, you mentioned about the fifth day and everything, and pitchers pitching six innings. Larry had 17 complete games in your All-Star year. So now that you have to adjust through over nine innings, you can't just go out there and have max effort for three innings until the next guy comes in. But here's another topic. This is interesting, as the Yankees are in the playoffs, and Gerrit Cole, their ace, who's having a very fine season, 7-3, 2.84 after kind of a rocky start. Although Gary Sanchez, their regular catcher, has been slumping, but he told Aaron Boone, I want backup catcher Kyle Higashioka to be his catcher throughout the playoffs. And Boone has kind of acquiesced to that. But what's your thought? I mean, I would think that the pitcher and catcher relationship is very important. And did you ever have to pitch to a catcher that you would have preferred someone else, but you had to go with the starting catcher?
Well, there are guys that get into the lineup for different reasons. And in Milwaukee, when I was having the successful years there, we had a catcher, Buck Martinez, who is still the broadcaster for the Toronto Blue Jays, one of the best defensive catchers that I've ever been around. And we had another player, Charlie Moore, who was our backup, who was a really good hitter, and he was a pesky player, but they couldn't find a defensive position for him. They ended up putting him in the outfield. And when it came to calling the game, thinking with the hitters, Buck Martinez was clearly your superior at that particular skill. Now, Buck couldn't hit. Buck couldn't run to save his life, but anytime I had an offbeat idea and wanted to do something, I'd throw six changeups a game, and I'd think, you know what? I'm going to trick Buck here. I'm going to throw a changeup, and I'd look in, and he'd be wiggling his fingers, calling for that pitch. And so if that eliminates a thought process that a pitcher has to have, if there's less I have to think about, it means the more I can concentrate on other things. And when I was locked in on that same page with Buck, it was like, okay, I don't have to think. He knows why we want to throw this pitch, and he's got a solid reason. I can concentrate a little bit more on my delivery. I can concentrate more on my execution. I can concentrate on something else, because that part of the game has been eliminated for me.
Well, I agree with some of that, but you know, if you're thinking about your, with all due respect, if you're thinking about your turn and you're thinking about your leg and you're thinking about some of the other things that we do as a pitcher, that I don't know if that really leaves your concentration in the right place. But on the other hand, you know, the game is the game. The pitch is the pitch. And, listen, I had my favorite catcher, freehand. I mean, I didn't want to see Jim Price behind home plate, not by any consequential decision-making thing in the dugout. I would go to Mayo, and they would say, listen, Price, pass the play tomorrow. I said, yeah, well, then I'll skip a day. I'll pitch the next day, or I'll pitch early. Because Jimmy just
wasn't happening.
Jimmy didn't move well enough. You know, Jimmy wanted to play well, but you know, there's some people that have limited ability. But freehand was the guy. He's the best catcher I ever played with. And then when I went to Washington, I told Ted Williams I'd rather have Dick Billings catch me than the little guy. I can't think of his name right now.
Paul Casanova.
No, God, you never want Casanova to be your catcher. He throws the ball back faster than you do. I had Dick Billings for one game, And William said, "You got to be come up and grab me by my shirt." He says, "Listen, you don't tell me who to catch." I said, "Okay, that's fine." I said, "But Billings is a better catcher than the other guy." He said, "I don't care." He said, "I like the other guy." I said, "So that's the way we're going to do this baseball team?" And Dick Billings was sent to the bullpen, and we didn't see him again for 45 days.
He's that around was, here. I see Billings.
Yeah,
time
Billings
to time.
Lives here now. So I had, yeah, Brandon.
Well, I had a question regarding these catchers. I've always wondered, you know, sometimes you see the catcher who actually calls the pitch, and oftentimes you see the catcher look to the dugout. Who's the one who sets that up? Is it just something where, all right, we have total trust in this catcher so he can call the game? Is it part of the pitcher, or is it just some managers want to call every pitch?
Well, in my case, I don't think I ever had a manager call a pitch from the dugout. I don't think so. I don't ever remember that.
I just always thought that catchers made suggestions and pitchers made decisions.
Yes, sir. Absolutely.
And, you know, it wasn't the catcher that was going to feed my two kids. It was how my year went. And I'd rather live and die with what I thought, unless the catcher gave me a good reason. And with Buck Martinez, he frequently had very good reasons for why he wanted to do what he wanted to do. And so I listened to him. Back in our day, managers didn't make suggestions. Nowadays, they've got the notebooks with what kind of pitches guys hit, all the way down to what kind of spin movement and movement pitches have that they have trouble with. And so coaches in college, and some now, it's leaking into the professional ranks. You're getting more and more decisions. To answer your question, Brandon, you're getting more and more decisions coming from the dugout, and the pitching coaches are starting to call pitches, or somebody upstairs is trying to make a suggestion. And you see some pitchers that just say, older guys that say, "The heck with that, I'm throwing what I want to throw." The younger guys are more used to the system of taking a call from the bench and just saying, "I'm going to throw whatever they tell me to."
And quite possibly Johnny Sain, who was arguably maybe the best pitching coach a lot of people have ever seen. Everywhere he went, he had 20 game winners. Johnny Sain said one thing to me when I first got there. We were talking about the catcher, then this and that. And he says, "Well, just remember one thing. You've got the ball. No matter what he says, no matter what he suggests, you have the ball. And by the way, if you lose, it's going against you, not the catcher."
Larry, I was going to ask you, you loved playing for George Bamberger with the Brewers. And Bambi himself was a former major league pitcher. Did he ever try to call pitches for you from the dugout?
I wish he would have a few times, because he'd come in trouble and he'd come waddling out to the mound. He had this big beer belly and his feet stuck out like that. And he'd walk waddle out and he'd look at you and go, "Good luck." He'd walk back. I said, "Good luck. What the hell's that? Give me an idea here. Help me, you know."
That sounds like Mayo. That's exactly what Mayo would do.
Last baseball question, and you two guys can add, and you can answer it too, Bob. Will the World Series champion be legitimate after a 60-game season? Is this one of those seasons we'll laugh about, although nothing funny about COVID. But I had a friend in high school used to say, when we get in trouble, someday we'll look back and laugh about this. Will we look back and say a 60-game season champion was legitimate or not? Because it goes against every bit of baseball history in terms of the marathon that a summer of games is.
Larry?
3 years from now, most people won't be able to tell you who lost the World Series, if they can tell you who won it. So people will forget. Should it have an asterisk with it? Absolutely, it should. I still remember the 81 world, the 81 season when the St. Louis Cardinals had the best record overall in the National League, and we didn't get to play it either in the playoffs. That's because it was a split season with a strike. But people forget. Life goes on. You know, it's a sport. It's baseball. Most people aren't going to remember it 2 years from now.
Yeah, and I think you're right. Most people in 2 or 3 years won't remember, and they'll look back, and the stories will get better and better and better and better and better as the years go by.
Yeah, Larry, in 2 or 3 years, most people won't remember the COVID-19 epidemic. You're right. Yep.
Mm-hmm. No.
That's not what we're talking about, Bob.
That won't be forgotten. No, that won't be forgotten. Although you think, my goodness, how will we look back at this in 2 or 3 years if it's over in 2 or 3 years?
I am Larry, happy. I am gay. Da, 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 da.
Larry, thanks for joining us, man. Good luck the rest of this.
You guys are a hoot.
All right.
Larry, good to see you.
good to see you, man. Thank you.
Take care. All right. Well, let's see. We have a bit more to do. We can talk about, we got to do this day in sports. Okay. I got a lot of good stuff on that. I'm trying to see what else I have.
And we have a very long mailbag, Eli.
Oh, we do have a long mailbag. Oh, okay. Well, then let me knock out these last two to tell you that, again, are very proud to have our sponsors like these, like Luke Nowacki of Pinnacle Wealth Strategies, who has served our listeners by creating great financial plans, life-lasting financial plans, business plans, and trusts, whether it's your family obligations down the line or your retirement. Let Luke's track record of success and decades of experience create a custom solution for you or your business. Just call Luke at 248-663-4748. He'll set up a complimentary consultation. If you feel comfortable, let him do his thing by laying out a plan that fits your needs. Totally ethical, incredibly knowledgeable, and caring too. Luke Nowacki, Pinnacle Wealth Strategies, 248-663-4748. Advisory services offered through Royal Alliance Associates. And interest rates, dramatically low, record lows, in fact. So if you haven't refinanced in the past few years like me and millions of others, you won't find a better time than the present to call David Hall Mortgage. He's been part of our community for over 30 years, built his business, maintained his leadership in the mortgage market by offering better options, more personal attention, and thousands of most satisfied clients have been produced. They've also sustained their leadership, Hall has, by providing the fastest service in the business, generally 3 weeks or less. That's why they've garnered nearly 1,500 five-star reviews. So go to davidhallmortgage.com to get started. Just call 248-308-5000, 248-308-5000. David Hall Mortgage, Hall Financial. Lower payments, better options, or personal attention. Well, you want to get into the mailbag, or should I start with? No, I've actually.
You always go first.
No, go first.
Let's knock out the day in sports. Well, you know, since I planned to do the show yesterday, I go back a little bit. So let me go back to the last couple of days, which is the 23rd, 2 days ago. First baseball team, the New York Knickerbockers, organized and adopted a rule code. So we go back. That's how far back we go in baseball. This is the day in 1908 that Fred Merkel made his famous bonehead play, didn't touch second to cause the third out in the ninth, and disallowed the winning run. The game ends in a tie. The Cubs win, and that was just a legendary moment. Let's see. Maury Wills broke Ty Cobb's record in 1915. He sold 97, broke the record on his way to 104. Jose Canseco became baseball's first 40-40 man, matched by Barry Bonds in 1996. That's 40 steals and 40 home runs. And you mentioned this earlier, Bob, the first female to play in an NHL exhibition game, Manon Raymond, a goalie for the Tampa Bay Lightning, gave up 2 goals on 9 attempts in a period. And to think where we are in COVID, it was this day 2 years ago that Tiger Woods, walking up that 18th green, as we described the other day, winning by 2 over Billy Horschel, with tens of thousands of fans following up the fairway. Oh, how we're reminded how different that was back then. Let's see. What else do we have? Oh, the Dodgers' last game at Ebbets in 1957. They beat the Pirates. Ben Johnson broke his 100-meter world record on the Olympics on this day. However, of course, it was in Seoul, and he was disqualified 3 days later with the famous drug stenolazole. Let's see. Al Kaline became the youngest batting champ at age 20 and 55. And this day, when I was 12 years old, a little personal here, I'm sitting by my white transistor radio. I'm 12 years old. I can still picture sitting in my bedroom late at night. I was supposed to be asleep because I had school in the morning in sixth grade. And Sonny Liston defeated Floyd Patterson as I sat and listened to that broadcast on the radio. I was so into heavyweight boxing. And what happened was, when the knockdown occurred in the first round, the first one, Les Kiter, doing the play-by-play, said, "It's a left. It's a right to the head of Sonny Patterson, and he's down." And it was not Sonny Liston, not Floyd, Sonny Patterson. And it took until the entire 10 count for us on radio to know who actually won the championship. It was Sonny Liston. He beat Patterson the next year, and then he fought Cassius Clay and lost in 1964 after that. And Ali Haji Sheik, Michigan's finest, played just after the Larry Sorensen era, kicked a 56-yard field goal, setting a New York Giants record on this day.
We all know also one of the great nicknames in sports history, Ali Haji Shank.
That's right. That's right. He did.
By the way, after you guys, you golf experts, gave me this big lecture about you never say shank, did you see Azinger and a few other guys said the word shank and also said the word choke a few times in the U.S. Open final round?
Choke yeah, is okay. Shank is not good.
I don't think he said choke. I heard that. I thought he said
choke. Oh, he
choke
certainly did.
I thought he said choke. No, I don't think he said yeah. choke.
He also said shank.
Yeah. Well, you.
Shank is a very bad word. It's worse.
When you're playing, you can say it on the air. When you're playing with a guy and he starts to shank the ball, you don't say shank. It's a very difficult game. That's why golfers always compliment each other. Good. In fact, that's I told you when I saw that the Tiger Woods, Tom Brady, Peyton Manning, Mickelson match, when you could hear what they're saying, and you can even hear it now, they'll say good shot to each other, even though they're in the height of competition, because it's a tough game and it's just part of the etiquette. Good shot. Nice Eli, shot. But you Eli, don't say shank.
Eli, when you go out and play golf today, I want you to think about the word shank.
No. Think no. about it. No, there's no worse feeling.
Oh, God, there's no worse.
Oh, and that's
think of the sweet spot, Eli. Think of the sweet spot.
Okay, mailbag. Bang it out.
The mailbag. I'll break tradition today. I want to go with a phone call first, and you can call us, text us, leave a message, 760-89-BALLS. And the reason why I'm going with this first is because it's the best thing we've had in a while. It's a great question. I want it answered. Brandon wants it answered, and Eli wants it answered.
Really?
Ghost but Point Charles says, Denny McClain is the only guy on earth who thinks Lance Parrish is going to get the Tigers job. You reported that, Denny. Where did you get that? He's not
I
even
said
mentioned in
he's the guy
any
that deserves to have the job. He deserves it.
I don't know about that. The Tigers demoted him, and you said he was going to get it. I don't know. I'm just asking
recall,
on behalf of a lot of people. Where did
that,
you get
I will
that?
Tell you that he deserves the job.
He's not going to get it. In fact, when we had Lance, I agree with you, Denny. I would love to see Lance Parrish. Even when we had Lance on, however long ago, he says, trust me, it's not going to be me. So he knows it's not going to be him.
He's so good with the kids. I saw him operate with Grand Rapids a number of times last year and the year before. I'm telling you, he is just terrific the way he can communicate with these kids. Gardner-Gerenhire did not have that communication ability. I mean, there was too many years separating the team and him. But this guy, Lance, could do it.
Lance is actually a little bit older than Gardner. Lance was born in 56, so Lance is 64.
He's a young 64.
And Gardy was 62. Did you say you heard something else about Gardy, that it wasn't just health? That was there a dispute of some sort?
Yeah, you know, I was told by somebody down there, they had him and Avila had some kind of an argument about some player. And, you know, they suggested the player, but I'm not going to tell you who the player was. But no, they apparently had an argument because, and then when you saw the press conference, they never looked at each other. They never acknowledged each other when the press conference took place. So
something
happened. By the way,
just the last strange thing, happened with a week to go.
Yeah, and the last thing said to me about this was the players were really upset about what happened with Gardy.
I think that Avila and maybe even Chris Illich have been interfering with Gardy.
I do too.
It's almost a player or wanted to get a player or get rid of a player. I think they're, you know, behind the scenes. I think there was a whole lot of stuff going on.
Yep. Bring back Dombrowski. Go get Dombrowski.
I want to tell you that you can tweet us as always at Eli Zarrett.
Don't tweet me. YouTube. Don't tweet me. Don't tweet. I don't look at Twitter anymore. I'm done with Twitter. So please don't tweet me.
Yeah, I can tell. I never hear from you anymore. And, right. And Denny has somebody write his Twitter. Tweets for him. Yeah. Well, anyway, so
no,
Tom
Denny
Campbell
doesn't have anybody write tweets.
What
for
a cheap!
Nobody.
What a cheap!
Why?
Shot.
Why say
what
that?
Is going on with the cheap shots?
Anyway, you can tweet me at least at Bob Page Sports. Thomas Campbell, and we got a lot of stuff about me being off and Fred Heumann sitting in. Thomas can't love the show with Fred. He is not a Page-like gas bag. Joel Connor from Farmington Hills Road. Eli and boys, I have been a longtime listener. Look forward to every podcast. The three of you guys have great balance and chemistry. Eli and Denny do a good job of keeping Bob and his massive ego in check. The guest interviews are terrific. The only shows I haven't enjoyed, the ones with Fred Heumann. The guy brings nothing to the table, a total bore who states
the obvious. Thank you. Thank
no
you for
wonder
promoting
he's no longer employed in the media. Oh, he wants to give Brandon more time.
Oh, jeez. Okay.
The reason he is not employed in the media right now is a totally separate, independent reason.
Absolutely. Period. That's another cheap shot, not by you, but by the listener.
Yeah. We should clear the mailbag with you guys to make sure you like every note that is positive toward you, and then you can okay it. Would you like to do that?
No, that's not what we're talking
it's
about.
It's different. It's different because we're on the show. Yeah, okay. Criticize me, criticize you, but to read that about Fred, I think, is a cheap shot, but go ahead.
All right. So Kurt Kosmowski, he writes, he says, guys, as great as Eli is in pulling the show together and Denny is doing his thing and Fred is too, no filter without Bob is just not no filter and no Bob for the mailbag. Ugh. More pleasant, says Bob Kraft, listening to the show without pages screeching. Ah! Brian Fusion adds, the show is not better without you, Bob. A Monday after with no Lions lament is a crime against humanity. Eli, you're nodding off already. You know what I suggest? I get some great stuff here from our listeners. Without our listeners, this show is nothing. We have no show. This is their one chance to come on. You're bored. Denny doesn't like it anymore. So that's it. That's all going to be from the mailbag. How would you get off the air? I have a great weekend.
But you're not talking about the mailbag. You're doing everything but.
I love Bob. I don't like Bob. I like Eli. I don't like Eli. I like Fred.
That's what we got in the mailbag. When you go off the show, we don't get any response. If I'm off the show, we get a ton of response. So what would you like me to read then, Eli, after that? Letters, there's a lot more stuff about this.
Well, the first letter about Lance Parrish was decent. That was a sports-related question. These are just personal notes about who I like and who I don't like. How about something that where somebody says something reasonably insightful? Wouldn't that be nice?
That we can respond to.
Okay, I don't know if this is insightful. But it's interesting, and I'm not sure why Rick, that's all he leaves as a name, is picking on me. He says, I was a big fan of you guys. I loved your arguments, your take on underrated Detroit sports figures, blah, blah. But Bob, your take on Adrian Peterson was so disgusting and ignorant that I'm done listening.
That was a long letter.
You're a heartless, soulless windback. You know, it is a long letter, and I had to edit it and cut it down. But the thing about it, he's railing against the use of corporal punishment with children. Now, it wasn't just I who said that. It wasn't me. It was Denny and Fred Heumann agreed with me. Mm-hmm. We support, within reason, not to hurt a child, corporal punishment, spare the rod, spoil the child. And I'm tired of the PC stuff who say no.
I don't think that's PC. I just think that's good parenting, and it's been well proven. I didn't have a chance to weigh in on that. I was never spanked, by the way, but the threat of a spanking did loom over my head.
Me too.
I would go, and this is not sports, but I would say that many child psychiatrists and psychologists over the years have said you remove something from a child. You don't spank them. You say no cell phone for the next 2 days. You make them realize you take something away. You take something away. You change their life that way without punishing them so they can think it over. Instead, you hit a kid, it develops fear. Is that what you want your kids to do, to fear you? I don't want my kids to fear me. I want them to respect me and respect what I say. So I am totally against corporal punishment. It's a bunch of BS. And what Adrian Peterson did was wrong, but that's part of a cultural reaction, just like would spare the rod was a cultural reaction. But I believe it's been proven wrong. That's all I got.
Well, I know this. My dad was 6'3", about 230 pounds. And I'll tell you one thing. When he walked in the house, I'm sorry, it was quiet time.
because
if anything had happened that day, and my mother would have made a great government witness, because everything I did, my mother told my father. So,
and by the way, if you two are examples of turning out just fine despite corporal punishment, I would put a question mark by that.
Fred Heumann said he got his washed out with soap.
You know what? I'm not going to go there, but I could go there with dynamite right now, but I'm not going there.
Okay. I'm the father of a 2-month-old, and whenever she gets out of line, I'm telling you.
That's right. Okay, what else you got, Bob?
Let me see some other stuff that Eli might approve of on the mailbag.
Yeah, it's getting better. Go ahead.
I've got one from Bud Payton. Bud Payton's one of my New York listeners. He used to watch me on TV, loves the show. But he asked a good question right here. We were talking about cortisone shots, and we mentioned it on this show earlier. And Tiger's history asked, does Denny still suffer ongoing after effects of those cortisone shots?
He can't lift his arm.
I can't lift my right arm up.
Some of the most embarrassing moments I spent with Denny McClain was we would go to these minor league ballparks to sell the book, and they would have him throw out the first pitch, and I'd say, please, just move up to 40 feet. Get it over the plate. Dude, warm up a little bit. It was really, really sad. Really sad. Really walking out there, and you were a little heavier at the time than you are.
And I can't throw.
You know, not only don't you look like Denny McClain, but when you can't throw the ball, people thought you were an imposter.
Yeah, they really did. I mean, I couldn't throw the ball. I can't throw the ball 10 feet. I mean, that's how bad my arm is. I can't.
Denny, do you want
to lift my arm right here, and that's it. Can't go any higher.
Yeah. So I know you understand now. You got mad at me why I said that Dr. Clarence Livengood, whom I went to see, actually, was a dermatologist.
We know that.
Why
Bob,
are you bringing that up? And all these cortisone shots.
But he was
really
the guy
something.
In charge.
Just a couple quick things here.
Every time I was supposed to have a cortisone shot that I didn't understand, Dr. Livengood came to me and says, they're expecting you tomorrow morning at Ford Hospital at 9:30. And then I went in and saw Dr. Mitchell, who was a great, great orthopedist. But, all he ever did was grab a needle.
Yeah. A couple quick things here, Eli, that I'm sure you'll approve of. Scott Plachter writes that Fred had a great comment, and that's what we were all three of us were talking about this when you were gone, about the ladies on the MLB network. He says, check out the full screen head to toe look that Kelly Nash struts out in a body sock every night. He says, of course, I'm not complaining about this. He's a young guy, but he says, your show is the first time I've ever heard anyone complain or say anything about this, because that's Scott. There isn't any show like this, and that's what we do.
I don't think we complained about it, but my point
I'm complaining about it.
Yeah, well, my point was, they never took they never ran a 31 trap, or they never ran a 24 trap.
Well, neither did I.
Feeling,
Joe Buck, I expressed in the last show, was that a studio host is supposed to just feed the experts,
right?
Ask a question, go to a commercial, read a spot, help with an interview, watch the clock. And the ladies can do just as good a job as most men. Sure. And that's why they have them. And the sideline reporting, I think, in all cases, is pretty much nonsense. Who needs somebody to say, I talked to Coach Smith coming out of the locker room, and he says, we really have to bear down in the second half and avoid silly penalties. They're all doing the same thing. It was created for whatever. I don't even want to get
into it. Television, period. Television.
Eye candy for male audiences. And then Eli, this is the last one I got for you. You'll be very pleased to hear this. It's from Pete Kaneos. And he does great job on the Darren McCarty interview and so on and so forth. And then he says, P.S., you lost me as a listener on WCWA in Toledo, because listening to a podcast anytime I want is easier than getting up at 6 in the morning. Keep up the good work. And you know what? I have no idea why they run us so early in Toledo at 6 o'clock, but whatever.
There's our listener. Wow. There's the one guy that switched over to the podcast.
No, you got a whole police department listening to
the show.
That's
right.
They'd listen to
on the radio.
Also.
On the radio.
Yeah. Eli, you're off the hook, buddy. Stop squirming. Mailbag's over.
Good. No, it was a good mailbag.
Yeah, I knew you'd say that.
It's a double meaning. I thought it was an unbelievable mailbag. How's that sound? That could mean
your
it was
favorite word.
Awful. Hey, we'll see you again on Monday, everybody. Have a wonderful weekend. Thanks for joining us on another edition. 170 something or other of No Filter Sports.
Stay safe. Stay safe.
I really reached my breaking point after I made that jump to heroin, and I just knew if I didn't make a change, I would ultimately lose my life. I was passing by a police department, and I just made the split-second decision to walk in. The police officer greeted me, Hope Not handcuffs arrived, and saved my life.
The first step doesn't need to be the hardest. Let us help guide you to recovery. Go to HopeNotHandcuffs.com to learn more.